Well, there's some topics that can be covered in half an hour and some that cannot. And the topic for tonight cannot be covered in half an hour. So I'm going to talk about some points with respect to this topic that I think are most appropriate for this audience. And if I don't touch on those things that you think are particularly significant, well, then, you know, I've just made a different judgment. It's not that I'm unaware that there is more to be said. And in order to get to what I think is the most important point to stress, I want to make five preliminary points, and then we'll pretend it's chapel and have three main points. The first point is that usually in our lives, other people are not the problem, we are the problem. And when we become focused on society and say, well, the church would do well if society would change, or our life would be happy if other people would just cooperate and stop being so aggravating, then we're embarked on a course that will ultimately be both self-defeating and destructive of our influence in society. And the second point is that, hey, things are not as bad as we sometimes say they are. You know, in that great passage in Hebrews chapter 12, where the writer says that being surrounded with such a great cloud of witnesses, let's lay aside the sin that so easily besets us and run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. And as he gets through that famous passage, he says, you have not yet resisted to blood. Right, things are tough, but Christianity has not cost you what it cost Christ and what it cost many other people. We're gathered here tonight, and given the craziness that's in the world, the true evil that is in the world, even here in Tennessee, it's possible, right, that some crazed gunman could come in here tonight and kill one or more of us because we're Christians. It's possible, but it's extremely unlikely. My wife and I, visiting Egypt several years ago, had the strange, wonderful experience of just having chosen a guide somewhat blindly and discovering that he was an adjunct professor at Harding and a member of the church. And, you know, when we think of things being tough in the United States, I want you to think about Christians in a place like Egypt, where it is not rare for people to be killed because of their faith. And thirdly, that this business of conflict with the world and of having to live in a countercultural fashion has been part of Christianity from the beginning. There's always conflict. Right, in James 4:4, and a famous passage in 1 John chapter 2, and in various other places in the Bible, it says that friendship with the world is enmity with God. Don't love the world or the things that are in the world, because it's incompatible with devotion to Christ. Paul says that everyone who desires to live in a godly fashion, you're going to suffer persecution. And when Paul is talking about subjection to civil authority, and when he's talking about becoming all things to all men, he's talking about a society under the Julian Caesars. And it's not exactly a roll call of great political leaders. Tiberius and Nero. Claudius is in the middle, and the best that can be said of him in history is that he was a bit of a lunkhead. And Tiberius and Nero are worse than lunkheads, a lot worse. We don't live in that world. Maybe we're getting closer to it in some respects. But we need to understand that we're not bearing today in the United States, or my wife and I just returned from a stay in Western Europe, Central Europe, and in Western civilization generally, the culture has become hostile to Christianity. But that's nothing new. And the fourth point is that culture can't change the truth. All right, Bishop John, Archbishop of Canterbury, John Tillotson, writing about 350 years ago, said that a person who, by disbelieving, thought he could get rid of God was like somebody who thought that he could put out the sun by winking. The Supreme Court of the United States may say that perversion is normal, and it doesn't make it normal. The Supreme Court of the United States can, in our system as presently interpreted, change the law. It cannot change the truth. You do not decide what is right and wrong by having a vote. Now, while we were in Europe, you can imagine the press coverage. I think that it got a lot of press coverage here about the Greeks and the bailout. You know, the Greek government decided to have an election, a plebiscite, asking the people of Greece whether or not they wanted Santa Claus to be real. And somewhat unsurprisingly, the vast majority of the Greek people voted yes, they wanted Santa Claus to be real. Well, the next day, he was not real. Human opinions vary, right? All flesh is as grass. The grass withers, the flower fades. The word of the Lord endures forever. And the final point is that evil times bring the opportunity to show God more clearly. A person cannot be a hero without facing danger. In the darkness, the light of the world shines all the more clearly. And we're presented constantly in the New Testament with this message. Both Paul and Peter in various places say, hey, live in such a surprising way that people will ask you, why are you different if you weren't different? If society was already touched, more than touched, dominated by the principles of Jesus of Nazareth, then we wouldn't be recognized as light. If there were no darkness, there wouldn't be the need for salt. If the world were already saved. Now, having gone through those 5 points, let me just say that it seems to me that the most important thing to say to this audience, I might teach this lesson very differently to a different audience, is to say this, that what's important is to be different, not to act differently, but to actually be different. Lots of people have tried to act differently without being different, and it's a fool's errand. It cannot be done. As a man thinks in his heart, so is he. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart brings forth evil things, and that's just the way it is. That's not a command of God. That's a way in which God made human beings, including you. And so if you're going to be the light of the world, if you're going to be different in our society, it has to be that you think differently. That the life of your mind and heart is different than the mind and heart of the world. And so in that respect, let me just suggest three things about the ways in which Christians should be different. And the first thing, the first respect in which Christians might be different, and hey, I understand that non-Christians may share some of this wisdom at times. Why do we know that non-Christians may, in fact, be generous? And that the fact that they're a non-Christian and generous doesn't taint their generosity. It's still a great virtue. It's still something with which God is pleased. So what I'm talking about tonight are not things that are inextricably distinctive about Christianity. They're just things that ought to be true of every Christian. But the first point is, think. Right? Actually think. Paul writing in a famous passage to Timothy, I have the King James in my mind, I'm never going to recover. I don't particularly want to recover. And in this particular passage in 2 Timothy 2:15, it is translated beautifully. Given the background of the English language, study to show yourself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Study. Now, what does that Greek word mean? It means make haste, hurry. It's translated in Latin, be diligent. And the word be diligent in Latin, that verb, is a word that's sometimes translated in Latin, love. Be passionate about knowing the truth. You know, it is the people who hunger and thirst after righteousness who will be filled. It is the people who search for wisdom as for hidden treasure who will find it. That's a beautiful image, isn't it? Have you ever seen somebody in a variety of settings in our society? People want to find that valuable thing that's hidden. And there's a certain hilarious aspect to it. Storage wars in German on television. Is just not that edifying to me. But all over the world, people want to find something that's of value. How much do you want to find? The truth. I read an article recently on the internet. The internet, again, is just such a wonderful tool for education and for wasting time. And this particular article was from somebody from an institution with some high-sounding name, and he was complaining that the American people were irrational, that they were rejecting science. He regarded this as a crisis. And he said because they were questioning commonly accepted conclusions like evolution and climate change. Now, I don't know what you feel about evolution and climate change, but I hope that you know enough about science to know that that man was not complaining that people were not thinking. He was complaining that they were thinking too much. He was complaining that they were not sharing his prejudices. Now, it's easy for us. When somebody with different prejudices than ours makes a ridiculous statement to say, ha ha. But is your faith a faith that you have won by study, by reason, by careful consideration? Have you put everything to the test and held fast that which was good? Or are you repeating what other people have said? Are you staying safe in what you've heard in the past? Well, John Milton said that the person who believes what his pastor believed, because the pastor said it, that person didn't have faith. The pastor had faith, but the faith that was in the pastor had become superstition in the person who accepted it. Cursed is he that trusts in man. Trust in God. I've never had a moment's worry that a single person that I would ever know would think his or her way out of Christianity. The more that you understand about Jesus of Nazareth, the more that you look at what he said and did, I'm confident that the more he will attract you. But the price is genuine study. Now, it is this that makes nonconformity possible, this renewal of the mind. Paul says, be not conformed to this world, but be transformed. How? By the renewing of your mind. And in the following verses there in Romans chapter 12, Paul says the enemy, right? The enemy is pride. Don't think too highly of yourself. Know when you don't know. Think, read, study. It's good for the soul. Now, the second point is that focus on the things that matter most. Paul, writing in Philippians chapter 4, verse 8, famous passage, says, finally, actually in Greek it's something like, what remains, brethren, is whatever is true, whatever is worthy of respect, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good report, if there's any virtue and if any praise, think on these things. And he uses a word that means, it's the word from which we get our word logic. Truly think about them. Focus on the things that will make you better. And in saying that, I mean not just things that are formally religious, but all that exalts the human spirit. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. Over in Europe, I was impressed. We were in the Alps for a little bit, and I was hiking up the Zugspitze, the highest mountain in Germany, and rather than assaulting it frontally from the start, I circled around behind it through a valley called the Kiental, and it was just incredibly beautiful rock. And it would have been beautiful if I never saw it. But I wouldn't have been touched by it. God has placed so many beautiful things around us. I was hiking in the Smokies a week ago, hiking along the top of Sugar Land Mountain, and I hear this rustle, and so I thought, man, that's a bear, and I can't see the bear, and then I say, ha, and start off again, and then I hear a rustle up in the tree, and I know what that is, and I look up, and sure enough, there's a little cub. And that cub just so beautiful and glossy. Just so sweet. And he would have been beautiful if I never saw him. But I wouldn't have been touched by him. Open your eyes. Open your hearts. There's beauty all around you. See God in it. Somebody did a study, I believe I've mentioned it in the class here before, that said, it was a sophisticated psychological study where they measured how good people were at picking up nonverbal clues, at understanding how other people acted, how what other people said and did reflected their attitudes. And they discovered that if you read great literature, you got better at understanding other people. Who would have thought? Well, isn't that amazing? That reading Shakespeare actually does some good, and reading trash doesn't. Now, it's your choice. Young man told me this week, said something about people going through life wanting to be happy. And I, right, God didn't put us here for us to be happy. That ought not to be our ambition. Our ambition is to be better, to be good. Are you focused on things that are going to make you better? And it's no excuse that you're old. Hey, I'm old. One of the nice little touches, one of the reasons why I so admire Samuel Johnson, great English writer that I've mentioned many times, I'm sure. His life has changed my life. So when he's 70 years old, he's learning Low Dutch. Now, why is he learning a new foreign language at age 70? Because he wants to keep learning. Because he wants, he's unsatisfied with who he is. He wants to be a better person. And you don't get better except by focusing on things that make you better. And if you focus on things that make you worse, you will be worse. Right, 1 Corinthians 15:33, be not deceived. Evil associations corrupt good ethics. You could translate it in idiomatic English, don't fool yourselves. And so why would you watch the garbage that's on TV? Why would a Christian intentionally taint their minds, tempt their hearts with stuff that belongs in the gutter? Don't kid yourself. And you know, that again, that's not an insight of Christianity. 1 Corinthians 15:33 is a quote from a Greek poet named Menander. That's the way God made us. When we think about beautiful, noble things, we become fairer and nobler. And when we give our lives to the gutter, we become corrupt. We deface the image of God. And the third point, I'll just put it this way. Occasionally, I'm subtle. Not often. But occasionally I fall into the trap of being subtle, and sometimes I'm so subtle that people don't get the point. And so tonight I want to make sure that I'm not subtle on this point. Don't go through life taking selfies. Right? I just came back from Europe, and we're hiking through this wonderful, beautiful setting in the Bavarian Alps. And we go to these museums, some of the great museums in the world, the Alte Pinakothek in Munich and the Art Historical Museum in Vienna. And we see these incredibly beautiful things, and we're surrounded by young people who are taking selfies. and I've heard the defenses, and I'm sorry, I'm not buying it. Focus on something other than yourself. Whether it's our own problems, our own worries, or how good we are. You know, our society has this, I've heard people say, insist when questioned about it, well, I'm wonderful, and therefore, if you're so wonderful, then you don't need to be constantly reminding yourself of it. Truly wonderful people don't have to tell themselves that every morning. Look around you. Look at, invest your life in other people. See what God has to say to you in His Word and in His world. Stop taking selfies. Because that's the true spiritual sickness of Western civilization at this juncture in history. It isn't just our views about human sexuality. It isn't even our views about money and power. Although those come closer to the heart of the problem. The heart of the problem is that we have become a civilization in which it is assumed by everyone that each person's goal in life ought to be self-fulfillment. And Jesus says, in the same way, really, as He says these other things, that you can't be outwardly different than who you are inside, that you can't be untouched by what you read, what you choose to focus on. In the same way, Jesus says, this is the deal. The way to find your life is to lose it. If you want genuine happiness, if you want your life really to be different from the world, you want to stand out in our culture, try this. Try being truly unselfish. Living your life for the good that you can do for other people and for God, and not in pursuit of happiness for yourself as an end in itself. Don't worry their worry. Sermon on the Mount. All these things the Gentiles see. Don't allow those things to consume you. Don't fear their fear. Focus on others. Find your life by losing it for Christ. Jesus said, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. And He said, the person who loses his life for Christ's sake, we'll find it. Path to true fulfillment, to true happiness, is surrender. Now, if you want to live for Christ in that, then the only world you've got, the world around you. When I was young, the church, when I was 14, and started preaching, it was often said, and I don't know whether it was true. If it was true, then it stopped being true shortly thereafter, that the church was the fastest growing religious group in the United States. And the United States is not, you know, we're not the fastest growing religious group in the United States. today. That has nothing to do with whether or not my life belongs to God. If you've not given Him your life, won't you give it to Him now, regardless of what other people say, regardless of the judgment of society? If Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, who died for your sins, won't you accept His grace? Put Him on in baptism. Live for Him in this world until it's worn out, and live with Him forever. If you need to answer that invitation, we encourage you to come as we stand and sing.